It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is a test. This station is conducting a test of the emergency broadcasting system. This is only a test.
Of all these opinions, this is the one that continues to blindside me, dumbfound me, gobsmack me, thunderstrike
just
me.
Blasphemy. Absolute blasphemy.
Okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
What's the procedure, everyone? What's the procedure?
Stay calm!
This is the Overreaction Podcast. I am Chase. With me, as always, my man, Cody. You can find us on X, at TrophyChaseTFDR, at CodySmithTFDR. How are you doing after a wonderful weekend of the NFL Draft?
I still do not feel like a normal human being. It is now past midnight as we're sitting here trying to get all of the thoughts, at least on my side of the world. I know you're a little bit, you got a little bit more sunlight in your life than I do, but I do not feel like a human being. I have probably talked, I don't even want to know how much football I have talked since Thursday night started. It has probably been an average of about 10 hours a day for the past 5 days, so 50 hours roughly in the past 5 days. I don't feel like a human being. I am tired, but we are going to power the absolute hell through this. This is what we do. This is why we love it. And for those 50 hours, a lot of y'all were rocking with us over on the draft stream at DD, 28,000 plus strong over the course of 3 days, 17, 18 hours, whatever it was live. Absolutely fantastic time, man. Shenanigans, wild, the beans everywhere. This is what we love doing. So it was an absolutely fun time. I know you were on there as well. So you talk about that.
Yeah, it was so much fun. It's a great time getting together when you have a bunch of sharp people just talking football, just talking about these landing spots, instant reactions, over reactions in some cases, just an absolute blast. Unfortunately, I could not be there for day three for some personal things, but hey, you guys held down the fort. You guys had a great stream on Saturday. So absolutely love being able to tap into that for as much as I could. But yeah, it was an absolute blast. And it's rookie season, right? Like all of the lead up for the past 3 to 4 months was to the NFL draft. And now we immediately shift to rookie drafts. We've been mock drafting. We're still going to keep mock drafting because I think rookie drafts all the way through, at least for me, through the month of May. I think I even have one in June, but they immediately started after the NFL draft ended. So we've finished NFL. We've already finished an actual rookie draft. And it's just an absolute insane time immediately following that.
Oh, I've seen, I think three of my drafts have already finished. I did two drafts that were pre-NFL draft as well. Yep. I've got a couple more of them kicking off. I think we start another one up tomorrow, a couple more on Friday. It doesn't stop. We just keep going right back into it. Fantasy football, dynasty fantasy football is the beast that never can quite die. And this is why we love it, right? So we got to go into it. Obviously, everybody right now is going to be talking about this rookies. They're going to be talking about their NFL draft recap. We are the Overreaction Pod. Sometimes we don't like to talk about exactly what everybody's talking about in the space at the same time, but like this one we have to do, right? So we know there's a lot of other content out there that's doing roughly kind of the same thing, but we want to get our stuff on wax. We did it right before the draft as well. We got to break down this thing. We got to talk about our personal takeaways from this draft.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we do, if you love drafting rookies, there's no better place to do it. If you like drafting in general, make sure you get yourself over to Underdog Fantasy. Do go over there, use code DDD, and you can get up to a $100 deposit match on your first deposit. So go over there, fire those up. We have BBM 5 coming up. Or is it 4? I don't even know anymore. 5? It's 5. Jeez. And so we have BBM 5 coming up here, and we're going to be dropping tons of content with Scott and Ray. They've already been diving in. I want to start firing some up as well, getting some fast drafts going. ADP hasn't totally shifted yet, so maybe there's some advantages in there. Maybe not. But it'll be a fun time to see where these players have shifted post NFL draft. So again, code DDD over at Underdog, up to that $100 deposit match on your first deposit. So Cody, my friend, let's get into what we've been covering for the past 5 months. And the draft is finally complete. Let's start things off here. We're going to go position by position. We're just going to kind of go through we'll go round by round for the most part. Maybe we get to some other position groups. We won't, but for quarterback, let's just kick things off here. We had some, you know, big time first round draft picks. We had Caleb Williams at the 101, Jaden Daniels 102, Drake May 103, Michael Penix at the 8 slot to Atlanta, JJ McCarthy 10 to Minnesota, and of course Bo Nix to Denver at 12. We all know the landing spots here. Those are the six first round quarterbacks. Don't need to really dive into much with Caleb and Jaden, I don't think. But for the rest, I do think there is a conversation because when it comes to our rookie drafts, those two solidified themselves at the top, whereas Drake May and maybe JJ McCarthy, there's some situational bias or situational adjustments that we need to make based on this. So how do you feel about Drake May, even though he's at number 3 overall going to New England, and then McCarthy at 10? To the Vikings.
Yeah, this one totally shocked me. I did not think that we were going to see the 6 quarterbacks taken in the first round. Honestly, they've been telling us this in the mock drafts from 4 months ago, and I always just kept saying, like, it just feels like we're getting smokescreened again.
Yep.
And that was certainly not the case. I mean, we saw 6 quarterbacks. I think that's the most since like 1987 or something in one draft. It was a completely unprecedented draft, especially as high as they were taken. It was the highest that 6 quarterbacks have ever been taken, I believe, in the NFL draft. And most of the, I do think we were kind of good in this one. Most of it, for a lot of the mock drafters, as it was coming out over the past couple of weeks, most of this was pretty chalk, honestly, right? Like it felt like it really locked in that it was going to be Caleb to the Bears. That one was already locked in well in advance. And then Jaden to Washington was there. We didn't have exactly what New England was going to do. They did sit and pick like that one. And then even the ones where they fell a little bit further down, McCarthy to the Vikings was always the place that it seemed like was happening a lot of the time. And then Bo Nix to the Denver Broncos as well. But obviously we got to see, if you want to go through and talk about those 5, whatever, but you got to talk about, like, everybody's going to talk about Atlanta. Just what in the absolute hell are you doing? Everybody's going to talk about this ad nauseum. I don't really want to get into the semantics of just absolutely burying the Atlanta Falcons, even though they deserve it, for absolutely just botching an NFL pick after you sign a $110 million quarterback in the offseason. But what do you, I just don't know what you do with this pick anymore. Coming off to the Atlanta Falcons at 8, it's fantastic draft capital, but good luck starting in the next 3 years outside of injury. I don't know. What do you think about these quarterbacks? It's pretty chalk for me outside of what the hell do I do with Michael Penix?
Yeah, I mean, McCarthy landing spot was spot on. It was just, well, probably 6 picks later than everyone anticipated. And then all of the smoke going up to the draft was Denver going to take Bo Nix, and they did, reluctantly. So as a Broncos fan, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I should be super excited right now. So when it comes to Penix, I want to have 2 conversations here. So before we dive into the Penix-Bo Nix conversation and really what happens with Bo Nix, are you doing anything with JJ McCarthy and Drake May in rookie drafts? Like, does a landing spot switch things? Because Drake May is not throwing to anyone too special. The offensive scheme and just the offensive coaching staff isn't too enthusiastic to, you know, the outside eye. Is it enough for you to put McCarthy in that Minnesota Vikings offense above Drake May in rookie drafts right now?
It's not for me personally, because I don't see how you get there in an upside play on McCarthy. if you just want to draft for the safety of the quarterback that I think could potentially get to that second contract and which one you want to say has a better chance to get there, I do think that's probably McCarthy. But what does that really look like? Whenever Kirk Cousins, who I think would be much better suited for this system, he is only getting two quarterback 11, quarterback 12, and he can never really ascend into a level of quarterback that actually matters a ton for the value of a dynasty fantasy football quarterback. If you're taking a quarterback in the top five still, like I think Drake May can still be taken, he just holds so much more upside to me that he could actually hit that. I do think that there's more variance in it. You could see it fail a lot easier just because of what you said. You don't obviously have anywhere near a Justin Jefferson level of talent. You don't have a Kevin O'Connell. You don't have a lot of things that are in place in the Minnesota Vikings system. But for me, whenever I'm taking quarterback, especially if I'm taking quarterback over wide receiver, I'm doing that to try to hit the high variance outcome. And Drake May still holds that much more for me than JJ McCarthy ever will. So I'm taking Drake May still at my quarterback three, but I don't have much of a separation between the two. It's just kind of like, what are those range of outcomes that I'm expecting? And I'll take the high variance swing more times than not in dynasty rookie drafts.
Yeah, I'm still with you right there as well. For me, it's Drake May over McCarthy today. I get people wanting to take McCarthy just because of the situation. I do think there's going to be some built-in ADV there that people are going to be willing to trade for that. And you talked about Kirk Cousins and some of his stats. And, you know, he did throw for like 4,200 up to 4,500 yards in that type of offense. But again, he's throwing the ball 560 to, I mean, the year that he actually cracked top six in, you know, dynasty or in fantasy for a year, was him throwing the ball 640 times. And I know the big conversation about, you know, JJ McCarthy coming into the NFL was he hasn't really done that type of thing yet. Yet is the key word there. Could it happen? Sure. But I do not expect a rookie quarterback to be coming into the league throwing the ball 600 times. Don't envision that whatsoever. So for me, I'm with you. I do think that the play still is Drake May long-term. I think that you know, New England eventually will get the situation figured out. I personally hope everyone in New England gets fired after year one and, you know, after like an abysmal season, but you see flashes from Drake May. That's kind of the hope there in New England, because I do want to see a complete shift just because that situation feels gross. But I don't blame people for taking McCarthy. If I did take a McCarthy share above Drake May, it would purely be for ADV in my league, knowing my league's, you know, biases towards the Vikings or towards McCarthy. So that'd be about the only thing there. But let's move on to the true conversation. Outside this top group, Penix, Bo Nix. We had some heated conversations about the two of them. You kind of highlighted the bashing Atlanta aspect. No one seems to care about Bo Nix in Denver. Hasn't been really talked about. It gets talked about from time to time, but for the most part, it's because of Michael Penix getting drafted at eight by a team that spent over $250 million or $250 million on a quarterback this offseason. So that's fun. Are you taking the upside shot on Penix that he can start next year? I mean, people have said that because he is drafted this high, that forget the contract for Kirk Cousins, that Michael Penix will start this year. May not be week one, but he will start for the Atlanta Falcons. And
I guarantee outside of injury, he does not start in the first 2 years. And if he does come in and start, he will lose the job immediately as soon as Kirk Cousins is back and healthy. There's no shot to me.
The thing is, though, like, they've already said that they'd give him the Jordan Love treatment. So, like, I get it. I do get, like, 2 to 3 years, but he's coming off an Achilles tear. Like, yes, it sounds like he should be ready. He should be good to go. But you're telling me there's no shot? No chance?
No shot outside of injury that he is a starting quarterback for the Atlanta Falcons within the first 2 years. And even if it is outside, even if there is injury, unless it is a year-long injury like he just had and he's coming off of, and I fully get everything like that. However, it will go right back to Kirk Cousins. The problem that I have with this is just the absolute arrogance of this front office and this coaching staff to do this, because the whole thing that they've been saying about it is that we are never going to be in the range to pick here again, and we have to do it for the future of the franchise. I have more belief that this franchise, or I believe I have more faith that this front office and head coaching will not even exist whenever Michael Penix is in year three, then they will have that they have this belief that they'll never be in the range to pick here again. Complete misuse of assets, everything that you've done throughout the offseason to get to that point of an evaluation process. They legitimately thought that he was going to be off the board in the first three picks of the NFL draft. Like, everything just seems completely fumbled. I have no faith in the front office. I have no faith in the head coaching staff and everything that they put together to get to this point of a team build, that I have no faith that they're even going to be in Atlanta whenever they get to year three. And it's the Jordan Love treatment potentially. And then you're telling me it's potentially, if I believe that, and I believe strongly about that, then you have a new front office coming in, and it's not even their guy that they're trying to make this number eight overall quarterback, eventually the new Jordan Love. And you're going to tell me it's a defensive head coach too? So your offensive coordinator, even if it works, probably isn't the offensive coordinator that drafted Michael Penix. There's nothing that makes sense for this long term. Nothing about it. So I don't have much interest. I understand the capital will keep his value alive in Dynasty. I fully understand it. Yeah. But outside of a three-year plan, which I will never play with within Dynasty Fantasy Football, because I don't think it's old school Dynasty anymore. I play this more like I've talked about it before on this pod, calling it franchise mode. He doesn't fit into any length of window build that I'm ever trying to do. So I don't have much interest outside of a mid to late second round pick.
I talked about this going into the draft. I thought the Falcons were in such a good spot with a defensive minded head coach, a new up and coming coordinator in Zach Robinson to kind of mimic and copy the path that was laid from the Texans when they brought in D'Amico Ryans. And it's like they went and got Will Anderson. And I know there's no Will Anderson in this draft class, but you know, being able to take a pass rusher, even trade down, get some pass rushers of choice, I thought that was going to be more the route that they would go versus this. So I think it shocked the world. I'm with you there. We'll wrap up this conversation again. We haven't really talked about Bo Nix at all. Don't really need to, but I am kind of curious with these two specifically, because we know McCarthy, May, Daniels, and Caleb are all getting taken in the top eight of your drafts, maybe top seven of your draft. So when you're looking at Penix and Bo Nix, are you taking any of them in the back of the first? If so, where? And if not, like, where are you looking to potentially, like, feel comfortable drafting either one of these guys in rookie drafts?
Nix, like I said, with Penix, I don't have much. I'm not taking him outside of a mid second to back of the second, even in super flex, whatever the case. Like, I don't have much interest because he doesn't fit any plan that I really have outside of just being able to park my value into a liquid asset. That's not all that liquid because it's still one single player name. So I'd rather just get a 25 first. Like, there's no shot that I'm actually drafting him in that range of the draft. Nix, though, it seems bad, but I feel like it's the right process play. I don't think that anybody, much less me, is good at evaluating quarterbacks or positions for quarterbacks to move forward. Except for the fact that whenever you have $110 million in front of the quarterback, I think you can pretty easily evaluate that position, right? But for Nix, as far as just the prospect himself, people are going to fade him. They don't like the Sean Payton system. There's not really a deep wide receiver core there. So everything just seems bad. But we do this every year and quarterbacks come out of nowhere. So I really don't have actually that much separation even between like him and McCarthy in May. So okay. I'm taking him just because of ADP. I'll take him a little bit later, but I'd be okay taking him up at like the 108. But I think I'd probably take him in the 110s.
Yeah, for me, Bo Nix is last couple picks of the first. I could, you know, depending on the league settings, things like that, 111, 112, probably to the 202, 203 range. I've seen him fall down there. That's kind of where I'd be comfortable at. If it has a two in front of it, I feel a lot better, obviously. But we'll get into that range of player in general, and that's more or less the reason why I'd be good taking him as high as 110 for me. So that wraps up the first rounders. You know, I'll just kind of highlight the rest of the quarterbacks that were drafted. Spencer Rattler and Jordan Travis both went, Spencer Rattler went to New Orleans at 150. Jordan Travis to the Jets at 171. Joe Milton and Devin Leary both went in the sixth round and went to the New England Patriots and Baltimore Ravens respectively. And then towards the end of the draft, Michael Pratt, the Green Bay Packers backup at pick 245. Any of these excite you or make you say, like, I'll roster them? I mean, I'd say let's leave best ball out of that, but lineup leagues, you interested in rostering any of these guys?
Yeah. Another record that this draft gave us. It was the largest gap ever between a first round quarterback and the next quarterback taken in Spencer Rattler, going all the way down four plus rounds of draft capital difference between the first round quarterbacks and the next ones. But I'm still, whenever you play QB on a two deep, if you want to go that way, I don't know if it's bold just because of the situation, but Spencer Rattler will start an NFL game before Michael Penix. So I definitely have interest there. Jordan Travis with the Jets, you have to have interest there. Leary with Baltimore, Pratt and Green Bay, he has a shot to at least be a more likable Sean Clifford. I don't even know if most people could tell you who the backup in Green Bay was before Michael Pratt just got drafted here today. So there's that. And then the only one that I really don't have interest in is Joe Milton in New England, because I have no idea what the plan is there. I'd rather have Bailey Zappe as the QB on a two deep there.
Joe Milton's there for the Hail Mary. That's it. That's pretty much it.
Oh, yeah, so, that two quarterback rotation, just in case you need a 60-yard pass at the end of the game.
Yep. Yeah, you got the ball at the 25. Just go ahead, Joe. Get out there. Chuck one up for us. So that wraps up quarterbacks here. I mean, I think that's the big thing is, I mean, I think Spencer Rattler would be about the only other one that I'd be willing to draft, I'd say. I think the rest of them I'd roster, but I'd much rather pick them up. I don't know if I'm really drafting Jordan Travis coming off of his injuries, Devin Leary, just the backup in Baltimore, just no real need to draft them. But again, rostering is a whole other story. So happy to pick them up on waivers after the fact, unless you feel differently, but that's kind of where I'm at with that.
Nope, agreed. Pick up whichever ones fall in whichever leagues that you actually can build that construction to.
So then let's get into the running back room here. This is where there's going to be a lot more, I think, variance and situation and opportunity is going to kind of weigh in, as we always discuss. And as we've said throughout our entire running back rankings, running back conversation, it's just like, all right, let's see where these landing spots are. Let's see what kind of opportunity there is, and we'll go from there. So let's just kick things off here. There's only we'll go second and third round, only one second round running back, and that was Jonathan Brooks going to Carolina at pick 46. And in the third, we had Trey Benson to Arizona at pick 66, Blake Corum to the Rams at 83, Marshawn Lloyd going to the Green Bay Packers at pick 88. So pretty solidified Jonathan Brooks RB1 of the class.
It is for me. I've seen people that still have Trey Benson up there somehow. I didn't agree with it before the draft. I definitely don't agree with it post-draft. For me, it's personally Jonathan Brooks. And then we get into the tier of however you want to rank them, I'm perfectly fine with, like, from 2 to 10, however you want to rank them, I'm honestly pretty okay with. There's a couple of names in there that we'll probably talk about later that I couldn't see throwing in there. But I don't – once you get into – this, once you get past Jonathan Brooks, it's just a very flat tier, just like it was before the NFL draft.
Yeah, I mean, I want to just touch on the one you mentioned, which is Trey Benson, because a lot of people do have him as RB1. I understand having him up in this group because, again, 2 through 10, not a whole lot of change. You can take your pick, be happy with it. But I think maybe I'm too low on Trey Benson in a way. But it just feels like everyone assumes Trey Benson is going to come into this role and, like, eat into James Conner, and that James Conner is just going to be done. I don't feel that way at all. I think that he can have a complementary role, which is what is needed in Arizona, has been needed for years. Everyone's been waiting for that the RB2 in that system to actually pan out. So maybe he'll be a great complement there. And who knows, maybe in a year or two, you can be talking about Trey Benson, but man, I have a tough time pulling the trigger on Trey Benson, because you're having to draft him in the 201, I'll go 202 to like 205 range is typically where I see him go. Maybe he falls to 26, but it's usually that 22 to 25 range. I just don't feel great about pulling the trigger on Trey Benson at that point.
not compared to everybody else that I would rather just trade back for, or rather just take the wide receiver that's in that same range, right? Because if we're saying this is this massive flat tier, at least how we're evaluating it, like, I just don't want to take the guy there. Like, I'd rather take two thirds and just take two shots on two different running backs that I'll be able to get 10 picks later.
100%. 100%. Then the other one I wanted to highlight here, Blake Corum, Los Angeles Rams. Ray did a great film session breaking down the LA Rams and really how they utilize just the positions in that offense, but also looking at kind of the share of running back carries. And I know that they didn't have anybody else there, but historically the way McVay has run his offense is he runs a true workhorse landing spot, right? Like, that they run with one back. Maybe that changes bringing in Blake Corum, that they are going to be more interested in, you know, adding some carries to Blake Corum and kind of reducing some of the workload for Kyren, since he did get kind of nicked up last year. Talk me into Blake Corum being a valuable dynasty asset or a point producing dynasty asset. Let me go with that one.
He will get run because you can't keep Kyren Williams in that same role. Like, he's not this absolute workhorse, 6'2", 220 back. Like, that's not what he does. He was able to do it last year, and he was able to do it very efficiently, especially within touchdowns. But you need some other running back here. And this was the narrative that I had with this backfield the entire offseason. You are not going to come in without drafting a running back. I mean, unless you're the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, we all thought they were going to draft one. They didn't, but
crazy.
You weren't going to come in and run back out Zach Evans and Ronnie Rivers as your two backup running backs. And so I have not touched a single Kyren share. And then as soon as Blake Corum was drafted, I went out and acquired all my Kyren Williams shares that I've been holding off wanting to buy. And I went out and acquired two or three of them like within 24 hours. So he'll have run, but I don't see him taking over as the one. I just see him being a rotational first and second down guy that they can put in. Potentially the biggest thing that he could take away is a goal line workload from Kyren Williams. But because he was good at that in college, but Kyren Williams was also fantastic at goal line last year as well. So I just see him being a first and second down running back. I think he'll have run. But again, I don't think we have really historical comps to really say what this is going to look like, because the Rams have never had anybody like Kyren Williams before. It's always been somebody who could really project to be that workhorse running back. And I don't think he projects to be that, but I still believe he's going to be far and away like a 70-30 workload split between him and Blake Corum, long as Kyren Williams is healthy.
Can see that. I do like Blake Corum a good bit. I could see him, you know, I could see McVay riding a hot hand if Corum was, you know, or if Kyren went down for a couple games and Corum got some run and did really, really well. Maybe they let him kind of ride it out. But yes, I'm kind of with you there as well. It's more of a handcuff situation where you're just like, hey, I'll hold on to Blake Corum. I'll know when to start him. And when I do have the opportunity to start him, he will be a very valuable fantasy asset because people will want him. He will put up fantasy points because he's good enough to, and he's in that Rams system where they're going to put him in positions to be successful. So that'll wrap up my Blake Corum combo here. Marshawn Lloyd, I'm going to pass on anything you want to touch on there. Like, sure, he could be the two, but he's probably going to be the three just because AJ Dillon's familiar with the scheme for right now.
This is another one where he was RB1 for some people coming in. I still don't see it. I don't agree with it. He's going to play Josh Jacobs is going to be the main running back here. I agree with you that in at least as a running back, AJ Dillon will probably everybody's saying that AJ Dillon's going to be cut. I don't think that happens. I know it's a cuttable contract. He's playing on basically a vet min for 1 year was the deal he signed. But I don't think either of us are very big Marshawn Lloyd fans. So I understand the opportunity is there, but he just fits in as one of the lower guys compared to everybody else on the running back within this tier for me.
Yep. I'm going to need to, you know, see some action by the Packers before I believe in that one. So if AJ Dillon does get cut, then there we have it. But we've all seen how that number two role in Green Bay actually works.
Yeah, and even still, it's Josh Jacobs by a good bit.
I was about to say, so you got Josh Jacobs there. Like, there's no shot. They're just going to be like, yeah, let's do a 50-50. It's like, no, that's not happening. So, all right. So let's get into round three. I'm actually just going to go through the rest. I'm just going to go through the rest because we went through round three.
Rolling off.
So we have Jalen Wright at pick 120 to Miami, Bucky Irving to Tampa Bay at 125, Will Shipley to Philadelphia, Ray Davis to Buffalo, Isaac Garrido to San Francisco, and Braylon Allen to the New York Jets. Those are all fourth round picks. Fifth round, we have Audric Estime to Denver, Rasheen Ali to Baltimore, Tyrone Tracy to the New York Giants, Keelan Robinson to the Jacksonville Jaguars, Isaiah Davis to the Jets, and then we have Kamani Vidal to the Chargers, Jace McClellan to Atlanta, Jawar Jordan to Houston, and Dylan Laub to the Raiders. So that wraps up the sixth round. There were no seventh round running backs, but sixth round running backs there. So really this whole grouping from Jalen, Bucky, Ray Davis, Estime, Rasheen Ali, like, let's just kind of tier it out here. Give me some names here. Obviously, Jalen Wright stands out just going to Miami and having a 32-year-old running back. Outside of Jalen Wright, give me some other names here that you're interested in. And let's go fourth round. We'll go fourth, fifth, and then sixth, and kind of highlight some guys that you'd be interested in drafting. Like picking up it off of waivers, whole nother conversation, but who would you want to draft out of these groups?
So I'll just read you off in order the tier that I'm actually fairly interested in and I think could actually have a role coming in immediately. Okay. And that is my entire tier two, the guys we've already talked about, Trey Benson. I actually just live after I talked through Blake Corum, I switched Jalen Wright, then Blake Corum, Bucky Irving, Ray Davis, Marshawn Lloyd, Will Shipley. Even Braylon Allen, man, like, it's still Breece Hall. You're not overtaking Breece Hall. Breece Hall is still a workhorse running back. And you took another running back in this group with the New York Jets as well. So that's my group. I have it 2 through 8 is my tier two. And those are the guys I'm really interested in drafting. Everybody else I just see as more role players. There's a couple of upside names later if you want to go there, but they're a little bit lower for me too.
Yeah, Braylon Allen and Isaiah Davis, both just, it feels like, yeah, we talked about, what was his face? Izzy Abanikanda, you know, just basically is now non-existent. Like they're just going to cycle through these late round running backs that are going to back up Breece Hall. Braylon Allen might get some run, but Breece Hall is the real deal. So I don't foresee them just being like, yeah, you know what? Let's give Braylon Allen 40%, or, you know, that's just not how that offense is going to run. So yeah, the names I'm interested in, obviously Jalen Wright. Ray Davis is of interest as well as far as drafting. Bucky Irving going to Tampa just because of what that Tampa Bay offense, you know, has besides Rashad White. I'd say getting into, we'll get into the fifth round here. Outside of that, like Isaac Garrido, no interest. That's just magic beans right there. If you have any hope in Garrido becoming the San Francisco number two. I get Will Shipley. I like Will Shipley. I just don't love, maybe Philly will continue to run, you know, multiple backs, but they haven't had a Saquon Barkley before. So I'm just like, high leverage backup situation. Maybe they put him in there on pass catching work, but again, Saquon Barkley, like, what are we talking about here? So I would draft Will Shipley, just because of the likability and the pass catching prowess. And
can I sell you on him potentially being, because if you want to make the comp, it is the offensive coordinator who ran this, that he is potentially a Tony Pollard to Ezekiel Elliott.
Maybe you could sell me on it.
I think that's like the upside. I don't think it happens. Let's be serious here. Like, I don't think it happens, but I do see him. I do see him being on the field and being used. I believe he will play well over Kenneth Gainwell, and yeah. Saquon Barkley is not exactly the fittest bill of health either, so he will get on the field more than likely.
That's where I look at it too. I'm like, Saquon's bound to have a 2-week ankle, you know, something like that, a little shoulder ding, and miss a couple games, and maybe you have a sell window for Will Shipley, or we can really see what Will Shipley is if you feel like holding, but at least you'll have that opportunity to move him. So that's the round four guys. Round five, looking at Audric Estime, Rasheen Ali, Tyrone Tracy, Keelan Robinson, and then Isaiah Davis. The one that I was always interested in was Rasheen Ali figuring out a landing spot just because there's really nothing behind Derrick Henry. But again, you're just banking on injury opportunity. I don't know if they're going to give him a ton of run with what they will with bringing in Derrick Henry.
It's unfortunate. Like, you just, I liked Ali too, and it's actually decent capital, but you've still got Justice Hill there. You've got Derrick Henry. Yep. You've got Keaton Mitchell potentially coming back off of injury whenever he's healthy too. So I just see him being as the third or fourth running back on this team pretty easily. He's my third lowest drafted running back in terms of ranks.
Yeah. And then the Audric Estime, like, I like him. I'm just genuinely curious what Denver is doing, just because they are moving out all the old regime. They've moved out Judy. There's talks of Cortland Sutton being gone as well. Javonte Williams, while he was the lead back, like, oftentimes Jaleel McLaughlin outperformed him and was utilized in a more, you know, fantasy relevant role. So I'm curious to see what that looks like if Javonte's out the building. But again, just too many freaking bodies in that backfield. No true hope at this point. People talk about Tyrone Tracy. I think that's magic beans as well. Give me Devin Singletary all day. You can paint a picture where he gets on the field. I guess that's about it.
There's some definite hope here. And a lot of people that did like him before the NFL draft, like, I'm listening back through a lot of pods today. I've heard multiple times that he will be the starting running back by week five. It's not me personally. I didn't really like the game, but if you're into the profile, like, if you're into that wide receiver convert and you think he can take it, the job is there. Like, it's only Eric Gray and Devin Singletary in front of him. Like, he can easily get on the field, but he's just not my flavor of running back. And so I still have questions, but I understand why the path is there. I'm just going to be lower on him than most.
Yeah, I guess that the path to touches is there for sure.
And he got, I mean, it's not horrible capital. I mean, right end of the fifth, it's not great capital either. I mean, you're going in the middle of day three, guys. Like,
here's the thing.
Know. It's a tough thing. Sell. Like,
that's the position. And this is something that Scott had mentioned on Destination Chill on Sunday. And it's like, it's true. How many of these wide receiver converts have actually worked? And the one that he brought up, and honestly, like, I was trying to think of other ones. Everyone wanted Gibby to work. Like, everyone wanted that one to pan out, and it just hasn't yet. But was JD McKissick from Washington. And so, yeah, I guess I can see Tyrone Tracy getting some touches just because of what's going on in that backfield in general. Offense itself is abysmal. Maybe they utilize him as one of the other 87 slot receivers they have on that team. I don't know. For me, that's just a lot of hopium. I mean, I guess if I can get him in the fourth round or on, you know, as a UDFA in my leagues, like, I'll take my shot on Tyrone Tracy, but I don't feel like spending any capital on him. It just feels like a lot of hopium.
Because of it, we just probably won't have any.
Pretty much.
He's probably going to be taken in the third.
So then the final round here, sixth round, we have Kamani Vidal, Jace McClellan, Jawar Jordan, and then Dylan Laub. A couple of interesting names, actually, which I found kind of intriguing this late in the draft after I just crap-talked all the fifth round. Kamani Vidal going to the Chargers is one of interest just because of that Chargers backfield, J.K. Dobbins playing with one leg. And then, of course, it's Gus Bus, who they just made it the Ravens West. So that's fun. No interest in Jace McClellan in Atlanta. Jawar Jordan in Houston, and then Dylan Laub in Las Vegas. Talk to me about Jawar Jordan in a second here. But, you know, Dylan Laub, the Raiders have always used like a Amir Abdullah type. Not a lot of competition there besides Madison and Zamir White. So I could see him having some sort of pass catching role in this offense. But again, what that actually nets you will be determined. So what are your thoughts on the six rounders and then your guy Jawar Jordan?
There's definitely some upside with all of them. I think they're definitely all draftable, so I'm good with that. Vidal definitely has the shot to get to the role. Laub with the pass catching work potentially there. It just doesn't, it's he tough. Probably needs, he's lower on my board than he will be for a lot of people, so I don't think I'll have much Laub or Laube, whatever, whichever one it is. Yeah, Lube, as we're now going to call him in the Heisman house, apparently. The one that is interesting, the one that I probably talked about a lot more than anybody else, is Jawar Jordan in the sixth to Houston. This is just because, one, I believed he was the better running back from Louisville than Isaac Arendo. He is obviously not the more athletic running back from Louisville, but I do believe he was a better football player at Louisville than Isaac Arendo. And so you also have, you just don't have anything else behind Mixon if you don't believe that Damian Pierce can figure out how to run zone scheme. He was very good at gap scheme, and then they changed up the scheme with the new San Francisco-style system. He couldn't figure out how to run it, and I don't know if you're going to be able to develop that at 24 years old in the NFL. It's more of just a feel thing, in my opinion, and I know he's going to bust his absolute ass to try to figure this thing out because Damian Pierce is awesome. Like, he's absolute staple in Houston media down here. Everybody loves him, but everybody's just like, man, you got to figure it out. So they draft somebody who can actually do that and bring in Jawar Jordan here. And I think there's a legitimate shot that he could be the RB2 behind Mixon. So what that role actually looks like from a producing level, I don't know. However, I think he has a legitimate shot to be the RB2 here. And that obviously just holds value.
There have been Damian Pierce trade rumors. I don't want to get into those at this point in the game because nothing has actually materialized. But there have been talks of Damian Pierce getting moved to a situation that might be more beneficial to what, you know, his running scheme or that he's good at. So if that does happen as well, then yes, Jawar Jordan will have some immediate interest just being the backup there behind Joe Mixon. So for the time being, though, RB3 on that one. Again, sixth round player. It is what it is. So anything else you want to touch on with these running backs? Any last names you want to have, you know, that you're like, would love to draft, or like guys that you're really targeting that you're like, I will reach a few spots to get X.
The two that I just see consistently fall, and I don't understand why, are Bucky Irving and Ray Davis. Both of those guys, I think from day one are fixtures within their running back room. So I don't see personally, whenever I see Marshawn Lloyd, Will Shipley, Braylon Allen, Audric Estime, Vidal, Tracy, Garendo even drafted over them, I don't understand those two. So those are the two that I will have a ton. They were guys I was high on early in the process. They're still guys I'm high on. I'll have a ton of Bucky Irving and Ray Davis.
Yeah, Ray Davis is the one that really stands out to me just because he's a different running back than what James Cook is, and could be a nice complimentary piece for what that offense could be doing or shifting towards, given the fact that, well, they don't have a whole lot in wide receiver, but they did add to that wide receiver room, and we'll get into that right now. So wide receiver wise, we're gonna touch on, just because historically for fantasy purposes, usually it's like top 50 draft picks. We're going to squeeze in Adonai Mitchell into this because he was pick 52, but we're going to group this grouping of wide receivers. I'm going to leave Marvin Harrison and Malik Nabers out of it. They're good. Yep. You're taking them in the top four of your draft, barring some crazy, you know, format, but Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison are going in the top four of your draft. After that, though, we do have Romo Odunze at pick 9 to Chicago, Brian Thomas to the Jags at pick 23, Xavier Worthy at pick 28 to the Kansas City Chiefs, Ricky Pearsall to San Francisco at pick 31, Xavier Leggett to the Carolina Panthers at pick 32. Then in the second round, we have Keon Coleman to Buffalo, Ladd McConkey to the Chargers, Jalen Polk to the Patriots, all within the first few picks of the second round. And then a few picks later at pick 52, as I mentioned, Adonai Mitchell going to the Indianapolis Colts. So let's start at the top here. Obviously, we're leaving out the two big ones, but the other one that's stayed in the top group, as far as like the top 8 of your draft, is Romo Odunze. He has not slipped down. I haven't seen too much. I mean, I've heard some people saying that they might take Brian Thomas over him or Xavier Worthy in some places. Like, there's some people that have that hopium for those other guys. But again, Romo Odunze is in Chicago behind DJ Moore, potentially behind, I mean, should be behind Keenan Allen. And just a tough, you know, room to break into. How do you feel about Romo Odunze and drafting him in the top 8 of your rookie drafts?
It's tough because it just feels like a one-to-one comp with JSN of last year of like, we really think the prospect is fantastic, but you're coming into the room, coming in with a quarterback who has questions as well. I mean, while I still love Caleb Williams, he is still a rookie quarterback, and we see rookies fail all the time, regardless of what their prowess was within their prospect profile. So I don't have much. Obviously, the situation is great for him, but he still projects to be at best the third wide receiver target on this team and the third receiving target on this team, maybe even fourth if you want to put up a Cole Kmet there. I don't think that's the case, but it's still just tough to project a breakout season. So he'll probably slip down rankings if that does happen. But there, I feel like there's enough to this narrative that he's still just going to retain value and he has a shot. I'm not even going to say that he takes over in year two, because we just saw this. Everybody wanted to write off Tyler Lockett as he'd be cut, dead, washed, and out of the league and in a retirement home this year. And guess what? Tyler Lockett's back with DK Metcalf again, and JSN still has to fight to take over this wide receiver core in Seattle. You could easily see the same thing playing out in Chicago with Keenan Allen and DJ Moore. So he still sits at three for me because I can't put anybody, I don't like anybody else enough to throw over him. You just kind of go in knowing when you're drafting him that it might be a little bit more of a long-term operation, but you've got to be okay with it just because the prospect profile is good enough.
Yep, exactly. It is a tough situation. You can paint the picture where he's fantasy relevant next year in 2025. You can paint that picture, you know, Keenan Allen gone. There it is, picture painted. But again, it is Keenan Allen. I'd say he's a Hall of Fame wide receiver. He's one of the best to do it. He's still one of the best in the league. Put up, 1,300 yards last year and still missed four games. Like, the dude is unreal. So even at that age, he can still do really good things at the wide receiver position. It does feel very JSN, because even after the landing spot happened, Romo Odunze is still wide receiver 16 and keep trade cut. Did not move an inch. Not positive, not negative. It was just kind of a net neutral where it's like, all right, it's kind of what we thought. It happened. But
obviously, like, it'd be better for him if he was in the Chargers situation, or if he went to the Giants, or if he went to, it would probably even be better if he went to the Jets, you know, to I think he could much more easily take over Mike Williams than he could Keenan Allen and DJ Moore. But you're just playing a long game, you know it. And I think by year's end, one of these other wide receivers will be higher in dynasty than Romo Odunze, but I have no level of confidence to say which one it is. So, like, there's just, I just can't figure out which one I would want to put over him. And I don't have any level of confidence to say which one that's going to be.
Here's what I'll say, though. We've seen it with JSN. Now that we have a full year, he's still retained value. He's still been a valuable dynasty asset. Is he, you know, top 10? No. He's not, but he still has tradable value and people still are very interested in what JSN could be. Same exact story will happen for Romo Odunze. Everyone's going to give them the excuse that, yep, he didn't put up any fantasy points this last year. We all knew the situation. It is what it is. This is, again, it's been an understood part of this. So there will be trade, you know, interest in him, not only this year, but going into next year. I don't think he will lose a ton of value between now and then. Barring him getting the chance to actually perform and then not performing. So, you know, he QJs himself. But I don't think there's that sentiment around Odunze. Everyone thinks he's a super talented player. So let's move beyond that one. Have Brian Thomas, Xavier Worthy, Pearsall, Leggett, McConkey, Coleman, Polk. Ooh. Back of the first round. I mean, this is, you know, pick 109 through beyond. Like, I don't even, like, it doesn't even stop in the mid second in some cases. So I have my own personal preference here when it comes to X Worthy. I know you feel a little bit differently, but tell me what your thoughts are with just this range of wide receiver. We don't need to get into name specific, but anyone that you're, I'd say anyone in this tier that you have higher than others, anyone that does not belong in this tier despite the draft capital. Let's go with that.
The only one that I don't think belongs potentially is Ricky Pearsall, because I just have no idea what that role looks like. I have him at like wide receiver 12 in rankings right now, and he's around like a Troy Franklin for me. And it's just like, that's a first round draft capital guy to a fourth round draft capital guy. And there's no way that that rank should exist outside of it being San Francisco, where they historically do not use a third wide receiver. And it is Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk. And if you don't think that either one of them is going to be moved this year, how can I have Ricky Pearsall there? And I think it was a little bit higher of a draft capital pick than a lot of us thought that he was going to be anyway.
For sure.
Maybe I do need to move him up. If I'm thinking through this now, like, he's going to be given a little bit of the same pass that Romo Dunze was given. So the only thing that I still can't get over is, like, everybody says that one of these two wide receivers is gone on this team, and I just do not know. Like, I actually think both of them could get another contract and stay around with this team. And so if that happens, then you're just looking for, like, a better Jawan Jennings out of a first round draft pick, Ricky Pearsall. I just don't know what this is going to be. So that's the only one. And then the one that I'm going to be higher than, it feels like everybody, just because I have them rank, is Ladd McConkey cracks my top five to the LA Chargers. I'm not saying he's going to walk in and be the wide receiver one from day one, but I do think he's the best wide receiver on that team from day one. And I know the team is projected to not be as high in targets that they're going to distribute out with Justin Herbert this year as he was in the past, but he's walking into the most clear-cut wide receiver one position that I think out of any of these guys comes in, except for maybe Keon Coleman, if you want to throw him in there, but that's just a difference in prospect profile evaluation.
Yeah, I'm with you on Pearsall, just to touch on that real quick. Something needs to happen for opportunity to present itself for Pearsall. It sounds like the 49ers are super high on Pearsall, which is great, but something needs to happen. And to be drafting him, and I've seen him taken at 110, 111, 112, I just can't do that. I cannot do that. I won't have any Ricky Pearsall if that's the case. He's going, I think I've even seen as, you know, low as like the 201, 202. Haven't seen him fall too far beyond that, unless extenuating circumstances. But for the most part, he sits in there in that early second. I don't want to touch on Brian Thomas or Xavier Worthy at this point, but Leggett, you got me kind of excited about his talent. Like, I'm excited about the talent. Just another situation where he has to overcome. I want to see what aging Adam Thielen is still. Deontay Johnson's there now. I know JT Sanders was a late round, you know, tight end pick, but still a tight end that people are going to be interested in. And if they do decide to use that tight end, I have a tough time finding where he's going to be fantasy relevant. And that's the struggle. Not that I don't believe in the talent, that it could happen. I didn't even mention Mingo, who was just their second round draft pick last year. Again, there's just a lot of bodies in that room, a lot to overcome. And I wouldn't be surprised one bit if Xavier Leggett is just not getting a ton of snaps early on.
It really does feel like they just, like, re-rolled a Jonathan Mingo style pick. Like, a guy that everybody thought was going to go a little bit later, that the profile is certainly not a top, where we pay. It was actually in the first round this year instead of the Jonathan Mingo pick, but just a profile that's typically historically not worth a top 50 pick. And the Carolina Panthers go in again, re-roll, and see if they can hit it this time. I like Leggett. Obviously, that fifth year that he had was a lot better than anything Jonathan Mingo did ever historically, but he didn't do anything for the first 4 years. Everybody probably knows the story of it by now, right? And obviously there's circumstances that surround some of that, and you can try to explain it away, but still, the profile is what the profile is now, and now we have to see if he can continue what he did in that fifth year and come to be a legitimate NFL wide receiver. It's just a little bit harder of a story to tell a lot of people, and especially with a Carolina system that you talked about that isn't the most inspiring. So I think him and Keon Coleman are the two that kind of just flip back and forth for me.
Yeah, I mean, you can paint me the picture and tell me the story that this Canales offense with Bryce Young, that maybe Leggett can be the Mike Evans for this team. Would love to see it. I just think it's a massive variance of outcomes, and you kind of talked me into him, and I talked myself out of him, and that's kind of like where I'm like, he's a guy that I can see the high upside, but I can also see another Terrace Marshall, another Jonathan Mingo, a guy that just doesn't perform year one and people just don't have enough hope in with that Carolina offense. So yeah, you mentioned Ladd McConkey earlier, all for him, happy to draft him late first, early second. I think the one name we both were so down on Keon Coleman. I'm not going to have any, like, I almost want to force myself to draft a Keon Coleman share in the early second, just to say I have one, just in case we're wrong. because there's really nothing else. I mean, yes, you got Curtis Samuel, Shakir, blah, 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 blah. But Keon Coleman's going to be on the field, man. Like, tell me he's not. Like, really,
he has to
tell me he's not going to be.
He has to be their starting X. Like, he's going to be their starting X. But that's the problem, is we've talked about this the entire pre-draft process. And then now that he's paired up and Josh Allen was apparently championing for him, and apparently he has a great way of dressing himself and figuring out coats. I don't know. Apparently he's likable now. So, I mean, he's got to be their starting edge, but that's the role that we said we didn't want him to be in pre-draft 100%. Process, and that we wanted him to be a big slot. And you know what? The only thing this team has is slot receivers. So he has to play outside, and that's the world where we didn't want him. But now he's attached with Josh Allen. He becomes a little bit likable. I don't know. He honestly rose higher than almost any wide receiver for me, just because a lot of the other guys fell out. But he comes in as my wide receiver 8, but you. It's kind of the point that you said, even at wide receiver 8, I don't think I'm going to have a lot of him just because of where I would have to draft him.
Two that I will have a lot of, just to touch on the end of this tier before we dive into the rest of the wide receivers, as we are an hour in. Appreciate y'all sticking with us. Jalen Polk will have a lot of, just because he's getting taken in the late second. And given the fact that they did invest some significant capital into him and the lack of options there, you could see Jalen Polk getting a nice chemistry going with Drake May early on, but they also did bring in a later round, you know, wide receiver, which we'll touch on with Javon Baker. So again, I'm happy to have him. And then I got AD Mitchell. I actually didn't think I'd own any AD Mitchell. I drafted an AD Mitchell today at the 302. So just to kind of give you some context of the fall for AD Mitchell, being a potential back end first to now a early third, late second type of pick. It's that Indianapolis offense. It's the way that they utilize that system, but it's also, you know, run first type of game. What opportunity is there for AD? Do like him a little bit more for best ball. But that wraps up that tier. Anything you want to touch on with your guy, AD Mitchell?
Nope. He's probably the biggest faller for me. So because yep. He was originally over Xavier Worthy pre-draft for me. He obviously falls down. It's just, it doesn't really seem like there's going to be enough volume to go around that he's going to be able to work for fantasy in Indianapolis. He yep. feels like he's just going to be slightly better Alec Pierce. And this offense is still going to run through the tight ends, and it's still going to run through, as I'm blanking on his name, wide receiver 1 that they just extended there. So it's going to go through those two.
Oh, Pittman. I was like,
thank you. Goodness. That was a bad gaff for me. But yeah, we're into this one. Is there anybody else that you're actually excited for in lineup leagues, though? Because I think once I get past this point, Roman Wilson's probably in there. Jalen Polk is probably in there that you were talking about earlier. But outside of that, I don't think we have threshold wide receivers anymore. Like, everybody else for me is purely best ball plays or just like absolute deep darts that I know for me personally would be outside of a lineup construction.
Yeah, for lineup league today, yeah, Roman Wilson today sounds like they're trading in for a wide receiver, which hurts my feelings for Roman Wilson. But I know magic beamed me away, but Troy Franklin. I guess that at this point today, no. I just know Courtland Sutton's going to get traded, and that changes things for me. But today, no. You're right. Everyone else is best ball hope.
Actually. I will say Troy Franklin is very still draftable for me. He is threshold. So we hadn't talked about him. We hadn't touched on him yet. Obviously, the fall of the 401, but the narrative of being paired up with his college quarterback, he might have been champion for him. I think they traded up for him as well. All that doesn't really mean much because they also traded up for Marvin Mims. Definitely draftable, could easily be the wide receiver 1 on this team 24, 48 hours from now.
Exactly. So I think that'd be like the last threshold as we go through the rest of the list. So I'm just going to kind of go through round 3 and 4 real fast. Malachi Corley to the Jets at 65, Jermaine Burton to Cincinnati at 80, Roman Wilson to Pittsburgh, Jalen McMillan to Tampa Bay, Luke McCaffrey to Washington at 100. Those are your round 3s. Then you have Troy Franklin in the 4th, Javon Baker to the Patriots, Tez Walker to Baltimore, and then Jacob Cowing to San Francisco. mentioned Franklin just as, you know, teaming up with Bo Nix, threshold guy. More of the rest of these guys are best ball. There's a few that I'm interested in. Jermaine Burton being in Cincinnati, taking over potentially a Tyler Boyd role. Yes, there is, you know, Yoshivas still there, and I think Trenton Irwin's still there, I want to say. So, like, there's still bodies to get through, but it seems like he's comfortably locked into that Tyler Boyd-esque role. I'm not as high on Malachi Corley as other people are. Would I love to see it? Sure. McMillan, meh. McCaffrey, I can tell myself a story just because of Washington, and maybe there's a little bias still, but for the most part, I'm just none there. Anyone stand out to you that you are interested, whether it's that third or fourth round?
Still, I don't really have much of an interest in lineup leagues. The two that I'll highlight from this range, personally, it's going to be best ball plays only, really, again, for me, as we said before. Yeah. But Devontae Walker is there for me. Jermaine Burton is there for me. And then Javon Baker, just because of how void that wide receiver room and how I don't even think they know exactly what they're going to deploy. Those three are my big best ball plays that I'm actually pretty interested in. And they're like fringe. Maybe I could tell myself a story. And oh, they're probably still rosterable in a lineup league, but you got to know pretty quick that you can easily cut them.
Yeah, you could tell me a story about Javon Baker just because of the situation. He's definitely the one that pops up. I'm disappointed for fantasy purposes. It's going to be a great spot, I think, Jacob Cowan going to San Francisco, like if there's ever any bodies that move out of there. But the fact they drafted Ricky Pearsall as well, you'd need to see both, like Debo and Ayuk gone, for sure one of them to even get him out there. But had some hopium for Jacob Cowing, but that just got extinguished. So, well, anyone else you want to touch on here? Or you want me to wrap up the wide receivers?
I'll just say the guy that came from San Francisco and the guy that I comped and we comped Jacob Cowing to right before the draft and the one who was playing in San Francisco system was the guy who made Tank Dell very, very good in Houston this year. And now you can put the exact same thing in San Francisco with Jacob Cowing. I don't want to say that he's going to be better than Ricky Pearsall, but if you want to, I know that was the spice magic beans take from me on the stream. So,
hey man, Juwan Jennings has had significant impact in football games. I could see Jacob Cowing having some impact in some football games. Best ball focus here, or, you know, maybe lineup focus if there's some trades, but yeah, that's a picture I can paint. That's some beans I can plant. But but you don't have to spend a lot of capital to get him either. He's going in the fourth round of your rookie drafts. That's the other
No. Thing. I'm going to run through every other drafted wide receiver because I think that these are best ball only for sure guys. Let's go through. Check me if I miss anybody, but Malik Washington, Miami, Johnny Wilson to Philly, Ryan Flournoy to Dallas, Anaya Smith to Philly, Brendan Rice to the Chargers as the bean planter himself in the seventh round, Bub Means to New Orleans, Jamari Thrash to Cleveland, Taj Washington to Miami, Cornelius Johnson as well, the bean killer to the LA Chargers, also in the seventh round, Jalen Coker's UDFA, put that one out of order, but we're good. Jordan Whittington to the Rams to be the next Puka Nacua of the Rams system this year. Jaquan Jackson to Tennessee. Anthony Gould to Indianapolis. Casey Washington to Atlanta. Devon Vele to Denver. And Antoine Palmer to Arizona.
Pretty much hit on that, yep. Only ones with hopium, as you mentioned, was Malik Washington, just because people liked him and it's Miami. Otherwise, I'm pretty sure Brendan Rice, and then you had Cornelius Johnson, which killed that dream too, because, you know, that was it was like, oh, Brendan Rice staying in LA, that's cool. And then Cornelius Johnson came from Michigan, so just an absolute killer of dreams. Maybe you can plant some beans, but those are the only three I think that are worth mentioning. Don't really have any interest in.
I'll go gross in best ball and like lineups, none of these guys that we just mentioned I don't really have any interest in, but best balls, I'll take a good amount of them, to be honest. There's a good amount of names in there.
Yeah, I don't know, there's a few, but not enough to get excited about. So let's wrap up this conversation here with tight end. Don't need to do a whole lot of conversation here. I'm just going to touch on the main names. Brock Bowers, obviously. I want to touch on him just because I've seen him go 111 because he went to the Vegas Raiders. I've seen him go 111. Generational talent, that is Brock Bowers, went 111, which blew my mind. But hey, has Brock Bauer slipped to the bottom of that top eight tier for you? Or would you take anyone else over him? Like BTJ, would you take?
He hasn't moved for me because nobody else jumps him. That's the issue that I have. Maybe if I wasn't putting McCarthy, like if I want to throw McCarthy up in there ahead of him in a league where maybe it would make sense to take a quarterback, but nobody was able to jump him in this draft for me, so I can't lower him down any. Brian Thomas doesn't jump him, so he's still at minimum. He's behind the top three wide receivers, and I could even still make an argument in certain leagues that he's over Roma Dunze as well. I just don't think this impacts him all that much. This just nukes Michael Mayer, and I think he just goes to being more of an inline blocker, and then Brock Bowers goes to playing more of the traditional slot receiver that they just absolutely could never get anything out of from the Hunter Renfro type for the last couple of years for whatever reason. So I don't think that this nukes him like some people are trying to throw out there. I've seen that Ben Sinnott is the tight end one, and I certainly don't think that that's it.
No. Brock Bauer still tied in one, still belongs in that top eight. You can flip and mix and match him all around depending on your league settings. But if you take him outside of that top eight, you definitely overdrafted somebody else. So, yes, we'll just go with the rest. Ben Sinnott, second round pick out of, going to Washington. Tip Ryman going to Arizona, Jatavion Sanders to Carolina, Theo Johnson to the Giants, Eric All to Cincinnati. A.J. Barner to Seattle, Cade Stover to Houston, Jared Wiley to Kansas City, another Cincinnati tight end, Tanner McLaughlin from U of A, Jaheim Bell to the Patriots in the seventh round, and then Devin Culp, from Texas or to Tampa, Texas A&M. Yes, it's been an hour plus. Sorry, y'all.
Oh, we're getting there. Okay, so we went through all of those. I'll just make this one pretty quick. I only have five tight ends that are draftable. And this is almost regardless of format. Obviously, if you're going to be in like start two 2.0, I think you can expand it a little bit. Only ones that I think are draftable are Bauer, Sanders, Sinnott, Theo Johnson, and Jared Wiley. Anybody else I don't have much interest in.
Bauer, Sinnott, JT Sanders. Yeah, honestly, I want to leave it at those three. Like you might. Yeah. Actually,
Jared Wiley probably goes off the list because of the Kelsey contract that we'll talk about in the transactions here in just a second. That one actually probably goes off the list.
Yep, I would say that you're right. Theo Johnson, too. You're right.
Theo Johnson, just because if Waller retires, he has a shot to become the tight end one here.
Yeah, him and Bellinger would kind of battle it out, but there's some hope PM for Theo. So, yeah, those are the only four that I have any interest in. People do bring up Eric All. I liked Eric All when he was at Michigan before he transferred, before he obviously messed his knee up and all that fun stuff too. So not really there, especially with what they have in Cincinnati currently. And the fact that they drafted another tight end later in the draft tells you pretty much everything you need to know about Eric All. So that wraps up tight end. I want to ask real quick, Ben Sinnott. How high are you taking him? What range does he belong in? Because I've seen him go as low as the end of the third, and that's in heavy tight end premiums, all the way up to like the 208. So vast range, but I'm kind of curious where you think he belongs.
Obviously, depending upon the tight end premium, but we're going to stick with our typical 1.75. Back and second for me is typically where it's been slotted in whenever I've been in mocks. But I still have him behind Jatavion Sanders. So he's my tight end three.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So that wraps up our NFL draft breakdown. Those are the ones I kind of wanted to highlight. Anything else you want to talk about wholesale as far as tiers or some of these players or anything else you want to dive into today? Or do we want to just kind of hit on the news here?
I'm just going to go straight into the news. This has been a long one. We got to get out of here, honestly, and wrap this thing up pretty quickly. So, biggest news from transactions within the NFL: Michael Gallup went to the Las Vegas Raiders. Ezekiel Elliott to the Cowboys, re-signing for the homecoming there. Travis Kelce, 2 years guaranteed on his new deal to make him the highest paid tight end in NFL history. So it looks like the billion-dollar booty, as Ray likes to call it, did not keep him off the field. He is coming back to play and win two more Super Bowls with Patrick Mahomes. And then Rashad Bateman, his two-year extension really did get released, and he will be in Baltimore on the next three years, $15 million across those 3 years. So it is a three-year, $5 million a year deal, as it was reported, but not confirmed until just a little bit ago today for some reason. Everybody got distracted with the draft and could not give me details on that one. Let's go to where this week's edition of Cody's Crusties are, though. Actually, beforehand, any of those names, anything that you need to give input on, we can open it up there. But I think everybody just kind of knows that either you don't have much interest in, or it is what it is, right? The biggest one is Kelce for our Win Now rosters that still stays alive.
Yeah, good for Bateman to some way somehow get $15 million. So sweet. Good for you, Bateman. Just on the Kelce note real fast, value, you know he's here for 2 years. First plus for him right now? Even at 35 years old?
Yes. Yeah. Perfect. Obviously, like, not just a pure random first. Obviously, you're going to correlate that to the team that needs to get a Travis Kelce on it. And so my first should better be playoff and back end. But yeah, if that's the case, then I'm still fine going into that in tight end premium leagues. Let's get into it. Let's go wrap this thing out real quick. Cody's Crusties of the week. The draft edition is going to be the UDFAs, the ones that I think could actually be rosterable within Dynasty Fantasy Football Leagues. And you better have a damn crusty league to be rostering these guys. I do not recommend it, but people that are on my radar, for whatever reason, either I liked them pre-draft or I like the position that they have. Frank Gore Jr. going back to the place where his father previously played at one time as well in Buffalo. Jalen Coker. Wide receiver that a lot of people like landing in Carolina. Blake Watson, running back that we liked going to Denver. Isaiah Williams, the better Illinois wide receiver that wasn't drafted for most people's money, went to Detroit. And this
J-Mo
is actually
replacement.
I don't think he's a J-Mo replacement. I mean, the only thing he has to beat out is Khalif Raymond. I think he's potentially a Josh Reynolds replacement, the guy that went to your Denver Broncos. If everything were to break right, obviously he's a UDFA. In Kansas City, they said they're going to have a Royal Rumble of running backs. And so the UDFAs there for RB3 were Amani Bailey and Carson Steele. I think both Casey and Jacksonville also added like six running backs and four wide receivers in UDFAs. Just a bunch of absolute names, but it'll be interesting to see if any of those guys are able to stick to the rosters. In Minnesota, you have Trey Knox. Kendall Milton in Philadelphia is the one of the running backs there who could potentially be like a Rashad Penny replacement. Cody Schrader in San Francisco to be the running back who beats out the Isaac Garrendo as the RB2 here. If anybody were to do it, in my opinion, I know that's not that I would not bet on that. In even odds, that's certainly not the case. But I do believe that Cody Schrader has a role on this team in some form or fashion. Dylan Johnson, running back to the Tennessee Titans, could easily be the RB3 here. And then Sam Hartman, quarterback to the Washington Commanders. This is one where the quarterback there has quit football before in the middle of the season. So I think he could potentially be the quarterback too.
There you have it. Cody's Crusties UDFA version. I mean, Kendall Milton did go to Philly. Like, that's, I guess, notable. But I think that was the only one that I think I caught that you missed. Everything else you rattled off. Like, good for you, man.
I think I got that one. I think that was
maybe it just like
he's the Rashad Penny replacement. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Brain fart there. All right. So that covers the draft. That is the entire draft and post draft UDFAs. All sorts of fun stuff. Again, make sure you do tap into to Destination Devi's Patreon, patreon.com/allgas. Get in the Discord. Make sure you're in the Destination 5 tier or the Heisman tier, where you can tap in and be talking about fantasy football for 10 hours a day. This is the time to be there. Help with your rookie drafts, asking trade questions to all of the content creators, being able to just have nonstop access to everybody. So make sure you are there. Yeah, patreon.com/allgas. Cody, anything else you want to add before we wrap out of here?
I have absolutely nothing else. I am dead. I am tired. It's been a grind. I have loved every second of it, but no, at this point, I do not have anything else that I can talk about from the draft.
All good. Yep. So that wraps it up again. Appreciate y'all tapping in. Long one, hour plus sticking through this. We will be getting into some more rookie stuff, a lot of more theory, a lot of startups and things like that coming up here. So lots of fun things to dive into still. Ask us your fantasy questions. Ask us your draft questions. Hit us up on Discord or on X. Again, thank you so much for joining us here on the Overreaction Podcast.